Okay, I will call the Property Tax Division to order. We do have quorum, and first thing we have to do is approve the minutes from March 24th, 2023. Do I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve the minutes from March 24th, 2023.
Vice Chair Lee approves. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So welcome back, everyone. We have a few new faces, and I'd like to let them introduce themselves. Through retirement, lost Kathy Schill, who had an incredible career, and she was instrumental in this committee for many, many years. So she'll be greatly missed. But we have a new fiscal analyst, Katrina Highmark. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katrina Highmark. Great to meet everyone. I'm really excited to be part of this important committee and get to meet everyone. Prior to working here at the House, I taught at the Humphrey School. I have a PhD in political science and also taught political science at the universities of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and River Falls. Grew up in Aiken County on a small beef cattle farm. So I'm looking forward to connecting with many of you in lots of different areas. Thank you for presenting today. I'm 2 weeks into the job, so thank you for your patience as I'm learning decorum, and great to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and welcome. This is all good people, you know, and you're definitely smarter than most of us, or all of us. We'll rely on you and your team. So, and then on the minority side, we have a new partisan researcher, Sam Moyer. Please welcome.
Yeah, Sam Moyer, thanks for having me. And I've been at the House for 9 years, and I've actually worked on the Property Tax Committee before. My first job here, I was a page for the committee. So, yeah, it all comes around. So, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Welcome. And then finally, we have a committee legislative assistant. My former Faith left. And she'll go on to do great things and have a wonderful career. She's the one that kept me in line and kept me where I was supposed to be all the time. So I have a new individual, Carl. He can introduce himself. He's got a big task ahead of him.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Carl. Some of you will recognize me. I previously staffed the Ag Committee in 2019 and 2020. I got my graduate degree from the London School of Economics after that, and after a stint in tech, I'm back here and happy to be here. So looking forward to it.
Okay, so welcome everyone. We're going to get into some, obviously some bills, and there will be some bills coming before our committee, which most of you know, Tyler versus Hennepin County. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of Tyler, so that that bill will be coming for us. That's a big bill that's complicated, and it's gonna take up some time. And we'll give a full briefing so everybody understands, but that's not today. Today we're gonna take a high level from the 2023 final tax bill, and we're gonna hear from nonpartisan staff. So I think that we'll just move right into there if Katrina wants to take us through.
Sure, and I'll go sit up.
Yeah. Katrina, would you like questions during, or would you like to go through and hold questions until the after?
Whatever you prefer, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't we hold until after? You can go through your presentation, and then we will, and then we have others that can help as well.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, representatives, committee members. It's great to be here. I'm really looking forward to meeting all of you. I'm going to give a high-level presentation, as our chair stated, regarding the enacted provisions from Chapter 64, which were passed last session. And I'll be focusing on the areas regarding property taxes, aids, and credits. I'm only going to be speaking to the larger items and changes within the Chapter 64. You all were given a spreadsheet, I believe. Very nice, thick document. All changes that are in Chapter 64 are included in this document, including those regarding taxes and revenue. Property taxes are a few pages in. You'll notice on this document, it says page 1 of 14. There is an additional three-page appendix, so it does have 17 pages. And I will be referring to both the appendix as well as the spreadsheet throughout the presentation. So if you have questions on some of the provisions that I don't mention today, they are included in the spreadsheet. Today's presentation will be highlighting, again, the major changes by expenditure regarding property tax refunds, aids and credits, and a few other areas. I'll be highlighting the dates in which these changes become effective, and I'll also be talking about the net changes for each of these categories. And if you're interested in the changes based on expenditure, you're going to find that information. I highlight that in the main script. You'll be able to find that page and the line number for those specific expenditures. I'll also be highlighting several. So I want to highlight some of the changes for the forecasted spending for the 2024-2025 biennium. So the forecast base in for 2024-25 fiscal year is actually we have a net increase for the enacted base of $880 million. So we do see an increase for this fiscal year up to $5.3 billion. And for fiscal year 26 and 27, we actually do have a net reduction of about $48.1 million from our forecast base. And this decrease is primarily due to Chapter 64 changing the renter's property tax refund into an income tax credit. And so we actually have a reduction in forecasted spending for the 26-27 biennium. I want to highlight in all of the slides that I'll be talking about, there's a portion that says net changes. These net changes are what you're going to find in the spreadsheet appendix. So if you're looking for where those numbers are, they're in the appendix. They're not in the line by line of the spreadsheet. The reason being is because we're only looking at selected changes, those totals are not going to match up with numbers that are in the actual spreadsheet. The spreadsheet has totals for all changes, and the appendix is just highlighting these changes I'll be talking about today. When we're talking about net changes to refunds, aids, and credits, these are going to derive from one-time provisions, which is spending allocated for one time, or ongoing modifications, which is spending that takes place over multiple biennium. The net changes to select tax refunds, aids, and credits, or everything that I'll be talking about today, we have an $880 million cost for fiscal year 24-25 and a $48 million cost savings for fiscal year 26 and 27, again, largely because we have that transfer to a renter's income tax credit. So for property tax refunds, I want to get into this. Not including the renter's credit conversion, the net changes for just the property tax areas in the Chapter 64 bill, we have a $233 million cost, and in the fiscal year 26-27, a $42.8 million cost. When we include the renter's credit conversion, we see fiscal year 24-25 does not change, mostly because that renter's credit conversion is taking place in the tails. And there we have a almost $50 million in cost savings. And I'll be talking about the renter's property tax credit conversion in the next slides as well. For one-time provisions, again, not including the renter's credit conversion because that is an ongoing modification, we don't have any cost in the tails, and we have a $209 million cost for fiscal year 24-25. In those homestead, the one-time provisions include a homestead credit state refund and the renter's property tax refund and the targeting refund. And the largest provisions here are the homestead credit and the property tax credits. The additional 20.6 that has an increase, it has a total cost, excuse me, of $185.7 million for fiscal year 24-25. In terms of ongoing modifications, this is when we do bring in the renter's credit conversion. We have a $22.2 million cost in fiscal year 24-25 and a $450 $0.2 million cost savings for fiscal year 26 and 27. The ongoing modifications, I want to start first by talking about the Homestead Credit State Refund. Out of these multiple categories in the Homestead Credit State Refund that were changed in Chapter 64, I want to highlight the one with the largest fiscal impact, which is the reduction of homeowner copays by 3%, which has a cost of $25.4 million in fiscal year 24 and 25. The one that has the smallest is the spouses, disabled veterans market value exclusion. In terms of the renter property tax refund, converting that to an income tax credit, that results in a cost savings of $492.8 million for fiscal year 26 and 27. It's no cost for fiscal year 24, 25. Moving on to selected aids and credits, fiscal year 24, 25, we have a $642 million cost, and for 26, 27, we have an almost $400 million cost for certain selected aids and credits. One-time provisions. Again, we see a higher cost in fiscal year 24 and 25 and some cost savings in fiscal year 26, 27 because many of these one-time provisions, again, are one-time. They're being enacted in fiscal year 24, 25. The largest being public safety aid, which was $300 million distributed to specific local governments in fiscal year 24 and 25. Additional local aids were also included in these one-time provisions in Chapter 64 for Echo and Morton, Spring Grove, and Northfield. In terms of ongoing modifications, fiscal year 24 and 25 has a lower cost, $281 million, with fiscal year 26 and 27 having $460 million cost. In terms of these modifications, the two biggest are appropriation increases for both local government and county program aid. The appropriation increase for both of those was $80 million each. In this page, I want to talk about the establishment of the statewide local housing aid, which is the second one on this slide, and that had a cost of $45 million for fiscal year 24 and 25. Then to wrap up the presentation, there are some changes. I've selected three from our other category. As many of you know, property taxes, aids, and credits, we have a lot of other categories. I decided to choose some of the larger items. Only one of them is ongoing, which is the Minnesota Department of Revenue Administration of the 2023 Tax Act. That has an ongoing cost of $3 million. That's reflected in both totals for fiscal year 24 and 26. And the other changes, the Housing Development Fund and the Department of Revenue, make up the remainder of that $61 million for fiscal year 24 and 25. So I'm happy to take questions. Thank you all for your attention. I'll do my best to resolve any questions you may have. I might also need to get back to you and do a little bit of research as I get comfortable with all of this. So thank you all.
Thank you. Nicely done. Lead Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how much of LGA is from old housing?
That's a great question, Representative Quam. Thank you very much for it. I will look into it and get back to you. How much of the LGA is for housing was the question?
Representative Quam.
No, the clarification is there is in the formula an added amount you receive if you have above a certain percentage of old housing in your city. And therefore, there's additional funding that goes because you have old housing. And I'd like to know what the total amount that we're funding for old housing is so we can add that to the equation of the amount that the state is providing because there's a cost for urban renewal and helping out to bring old housing up to standards. So I just know what the total picture is for that.
Great.
Yeah. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, included in the member packets is a full act summary of the entire tax bill. And if you turn to page 25 of that act summary, you'll see the new LGA formula. and that shows the proportions of the need-based formula for medium and large cities that is due to the pre-1940 housing percentages within those cities. So I know it's the intention of the chair to talk a little bit more about the LGA changes in detail next week, but I'll cover them a little bit too in the upcoming presentation, but that page 25 of the Act summary has a little bit more information on that.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, but I specifically was asking for the amount because I want it clearly stated and provided what the dollar amount is. And I do realize that there was a, previously we had a second area of not quite as old but still old housing that was added into the formula. But instead of having it, here's the formula, I want to see here's the amount of dollars it actually is.
Representative Kwan, if you have that information, that'd be wonderful. If you don't, we will get that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kwan, I would be very happy to get you that information. I don't have it on me at this moment, but I'll look into it and I'll definitely get back to you. Thank you very much.
Any other questions from members? Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just with Representative Kwan's question, it just jogged something, a thought in my mind. With the pre-1940 housing stock, and that was used quite a bit as a part of the LGA formula, as redevelopment takes place and those homes may be removed or those dwellings may be removed and they may be developed into other uses, multifamily, malls, whatever the case may be, do we know if the amount of housing is going to be the number of homes that a community may have pre-1940 is adjustable based on the redevelopment and raising those structures because they're just not safe anymore or what have you? How does that affect LGA payments to local communities?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, that number would change. So that's a value that gets updated regularly. And, you know, as the data gets updated, that value would change for individual cities. And if they have less pre-1940 housing within their city, it would reduce their need within the LGA formula.
Representative O'Driscoll. Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who this question is for, but I was wondering if someone could explain the renter's tax, the conversion to being a tax credit. We talked about this last year, how hopefully this would help make sure that the people who qualify for the renter's tax credit could access it more. And so I'm wondering if you could explain how if we're getting more money to people, how that's a cost savings from this bill, in this spreadsheet.
Williams? Mr. Swanson?
Mr. Chair, we do have an upcoming slide specifically on that article, and Mr. Okay. Williams is planning on going into detail on it then. I'm sure he'd be happy to talk more about it now, too.
You could just tell. Everybody's so excited. We're asking questions. We're back in the game. Chair Gomez.
Thank you. So kind of just going back to Kwan's question, I thought that was interesting. Like, is there a way to separate out, like, this is how much money was associated with a certain factor being included in the formula? Or, like, this is all a little bit, confusing to me, so I don't know if that's possible.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, not really. So the way the LGA formula works is that it's based off of a city's need and ability to pay. So you could have two cities with the same amount of free pre-1940 housing percentage, and really all other need factors within the formula could be equal, but they receive different amounts of LGA because their tax base makeup is different. So it's a hard thing to sort of feather out that the impact of that one individual factor on any given city's LGA. It's not really sort of tied directly to the overall amount, but it is a factor that goes into determining a portion of how much a city gets in LGA.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that was an interesting question, but I suspected that was the case. But I bet if you guys sat down that you could kind of get to what the impact of the housing age factor was by running, you know, like maybe you could run some different scenarios with one place so that the tax base information is the same, to see what impact the housing age factor has on the overall allocation. We're not going to get like a list of like, this is what the housing age contribution was to each LGA allocation for a city, for example.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, that's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Guam.
Thank you. It's called math, and it's easy to generate a delta. And if staff needs assistance, I can have a meeting with them. But it's not trivial if, you know, we're talking large sums of money over years, and it'd be nice to understand that. So if we don't, I'm assuming that we do actually have staff that can do the math, but it's not that difficult. And frankly, part of my job for sitting here is to understand what we're doing, how we're doing it, and since we just recently adjusted the formula, we should see the impact. And if we consider old housing important enough to add additional funding, then we ought to actually know, you know, how much we're doing towards that. So frankly, I find it discouraging that we're being told we can't get information we ask for.
Well, we can go to a commercial, but anyway, staff, you're doing a wonderful job. You're extremely intelligent, and I look forward, if you could please provide that information, and don't take any of that in a negative way. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just like really confused about that response. I'm going to be honest. I was trying to be helpful. I wasn't trying to insult anybody. I mean, I literally was trying to think about a way to get you the information that you wanted. And, you know, our staff is like, knows this formula in and out, and the implication that we don't have the capacity on staff is insulting to them and completely contradicts the conversation that Mr. Swanson and I just had. So let's just cool it down a little bit, maybe. And really, there's no need to impugn the abilities of our staff who manage this formula every day.
Mr. Chair, I would like to clarify that I was trying to get clarification that we should. Okay.
We're going to move on.
Mr. Chair.
Wait to be recognized.
Mr. Chair. I'm waiting to be recognized. I'm just letting him realize that I'm asking to be recognized.
So one thing that we're not going to do is turn this into a SNL skit and be disrespectful to people. If you want to make a point, you know how it works, Representative Guam. Mm-hmm. You treat people with respect, okay? And I'm going to ask you that you do treat people with respect and dignity. If you have a question, ask a question with no motives or questioning people's intelligence or anything.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My whole point was the question that we didn't have staff available to do it was implying that they didn't. And frankly, if I need clarification to be given so they understand what data I'm looking for, I'm available to meet with them to do that. But we should never have, well, we can't get that data as an answer, because my citizens deserve the data.
Thank you. Representative Heimer. Oh, I called you a representative. I just downgraded you. See all this stuff here, you know. So please don't take any of what you're feeling today as the opening day of the game. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cuomo, I just want to clarify that in I don't know the information off of the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me, or if I do, I don't know where to find it. It is only my 11th day on the job, and I would be very happy to meet with you at a future time to talk about the questions and get you those answers. And I will be getting you those answers and sharing those with the rest of the committee. So I just want to make it clear that we can find some data to help answer your question, and I hope that my comments earlier that I don't have the information at the moment was not construed as that I'm not going to provide that information. I do want to. I am here as a nonpartisan staff member, and I'm here to serve both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, so. The other person that said they
think. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to my question from previously about the pre-1940 housing stock and its impact as that housing gets removed from the housing inventory. The whole concept behind that 1940 provision was that the infrastructure in a community, that the roads, the sewer, the water, the curb, the gutter, your water treatment facility plants, your sewer treatment facility plants were brought online at or about the same time as that housing stock was. The challenge that we have is if we don't take the housing stock, well, if the housing stock comes out of circulation, you still may have those infrastructure problems to be able to allow for a balance within the community. I can also tell you that we're coming up very quickly on the centennial anniversary of 1940, and this committee may want to anticipate some revisions in the formula. And I know that probably was just tweeted out by seven people in the room. O'Driscoll said change the formula because it's like the Holy Grail. You don't touch that, and everybody's got their horse in the race on this thing. But you're going to have housing stock that was not in the 1960s, and that's 50, 60 years old as well. And so it's what it is it's a continuous turning of property and turning of housing stock on there. I don't know if I have a conclusion on it, yeah. Other than the fact that, like I said, it was tweeted out probably that O'Driscoll wants to touch the formula. So probably going to get a few more appointments on my calendar this session as a result of that comment.
Any other questions from members? Ms. Highmark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
That wasn't too rough, was it?
You'll always remember.
All right.
The professor, she's used to it.
Okay. Yes. Next presenter, Mr. Swanson.
Was the other person that said that he couldn't get the information?
Mr. Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. We are going to walk through in a little bit more detail some of the provisions within the 2023 tax bill that fall under the jurisdiction of our committee. We won't cover all of the articles, obviously, that were in the bill, but we will focus on those with items under the jurisdiction of the Property Tax Division, and that includes Articles 3, 4, and 6 through 11. Similar to Ms. Highmark's approach, we won't go through each individual provision within those articles, but we will try to keep it at a high level. But members do have a full act summary in their packets, and if there are things within the articles that aren't in the presentation, we'd be happy to take questions on those as well. So starting with Article 3, that was the property tax article within the tax bill. One of the provisions within that article was an increase in levy authority for watershed districts. The article also stipulated that land underneath solar energy generating systems are required to be classified as 3A commercial if a parcel contains multiple systems that cannot be combined for the purposes of the solar energy production tax. Community land trusts will now have the ability to receive the 4D2 property tax classification. This is a new classification that provides community land trusts that are owned and occupied as a homestead by the owner a reduced classification rate of 0.75%. The first year valuation limit for agricultural homestead property is increased under the tax bill up to $3.5 million, and homeowners will now be able to qualify for homestead and property tax refunds by providing an individual taxpayer identification number, or ITIN, on their homestead application. This article contained other changes related to 4D low-income rental properties. So prior to the change, there had been two separate tiers for 4D low-income rental properties. Those all get consolidated into one tier, and these are now referred to as 4D1 properties, and they receive a reduced classification rate of 0.25%. Property owners will need to receive municipal approval to receive the 4D1 property tax classification if the 4D1 property within the city exceeds 2% of the overall tax base. And property owners will now be required to spend the savings, property tax savings, due to the reduced classification rate on things like security improvements or building improvements, rent stabilization, or increases to the property's replacement reserve account. This article of the bill increased the valuation thresholds and maximum exclusion for the homestead market value exclusion. And it also made a couple of changes to the senior citizen property tax deferral program, including increasing the income limit for the program and reducing the number of years a property must be occupied in order for the homeowner to participate in the program. Moving on to Article 4, which was the property tax aids article within the bill. As I mentioned earlier, it's my understanding that next week we'll get into the LGA and CPA changes in a little bit more detail. Additionally, we'll talk more about the public safety aid then. I just wanted to mention that those changes were in the final bill, and we'll talk a little bit more about those next week. Ms. Highmark referenced the copay percentage reductions to the homestead credit refund. This is the homeowner property tax refund. And those changes reduce the copay percentages by 3%. There were a number of changes related to the PILT program, which is the payment in lieu of taxes. And these changes included increasing payments for other natural resources land. There were two new PILT payments established for counties with high proportions of PILT acreage. There was a provision that prevented the valuation reduction of certain PILT lands within the program. And certain PILT payments will now be annually adjusted to inflation. Article 4 established a new soil and water conservation district aid. This aid paid out $15 million in 2023. We'll pay that same amount in 2024 and then $12 million annually going forward. The article established a new electric generation transition aid. This will be available to counties, cities, townships, and school districts, and will provide aid when tax base is lost due to the closure of an electric generation plant. Once a jurisdiction is receiving aid, it will continue to do so for 20 years as the aid is phased out, unless the jurisdiction recovers a significant portion of the tax base that had been lost. This article also adds tribal governments to the distribution of the local homeless prevention aid. Article 4 also establishes, I believe Ms. Highmark referenced, the new statewide local housing aid. This provides aid to counties and cities as well as tribal nations to develop affordable housing. This aid will pay $19.5 million in 2024 and 2025 and then $10 million annually thereafter. A new aid to tribal nations was established in this article as well, and that will pay $35 million annually beginning in 2024. There was a one-time increase of each of the three property tax refund programs for refunds based on taxes paid in 2023. So those increases are for the homestead credit refund, which is the homeowner property tax refund program, the renter's credit, and the targeting property tax refund program that's also available to homeowners. And lastly, Article 4 created a new 4D transition aid, which provides aid in 2025 and 2026 in cities where 4D1 property exceeds 2% of the tax base. This is to just help with the tax base losses related to the reduction of the class rate for low-income rental properties, the 4D1 classification change.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swanson, going back to page 5 of your handout, bottom bullet point there, certain PILT payments adjusted to inflation. Which ones were and which ones weren't, or what's the breakdown of that change?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I was trying to find the page within the Act summary that outlines that a little bit better. But basically, it's the PIL payments that are based on natural resources lands. So what we traditionally think of as PILT, all of those payments will now be indexed to inflation. The phrasing of that is because there are a few other programs and statute that sort of use that acronym similarly, but it's sort of the PILT that's under the purview of this committee, the payments to counties for sort of natural resources lands.
Mr. Anderson, or Representative Anderson, sorry.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, I appreciate the clarification. So basically, counties that receive PILT will all be getting the inflation adjustment.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, that's correct.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Next, we have Mr. Are you going to continue? All right, Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, one more slide. So Article 6, the minerals taxes. The primary change in this article was the change of the net proceeds tax. It was converted to a gross proceeds tax under the bill. The net proceeds tax is the in lieu of property tax for non-ferrous or non-taconite mining activities. These changes also included an expansion of the taconite assistance area to include additional regions nearby the taconite assistance area where non-ferrous minerals are mined. The rate on this tax is reduced in the bill from 2% to 0.4%. A new $2 million minimum payment is established for the tax for mining operations that have their permits to mine but have not started paying the tax. And the distributions of the tax were changed under the bill as well. This article also contained a one-time transfer of $6 million from the property tax relief account. This is a one of the accounts that the production tax, which is the in lieu of property tax on taconite mining activities. That's one of the distribution accounts for that tax, and the bill transferred $6 million from that account and distributed those funds for a variety of grants and other distributions on the Iron Range. And lastly, there were a couple of other transfers between various production tax distribution accounts in that article.
Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Chair Liz Lagarde and members, I'm going to talk about Article 7, which pertains to the renter's credit. As Ms. Highmark discussed, the renter's credit was converted from a standalone refund program to a refundable income tax credit in last year's tax bill. Along with the change in administration and timing, the income measure used to calculate the credit was moved from the broader measure of household income, which includes several types of non-taxable income, to adjusted gross income, which will increase refunds for individuals that have non-taxable income that was included in household income but not AGI. The change in administration for the renter's credit was effective for tax year 2024, so it was essentially delayed 1 year. That means that in August 2024, this year, renter's credits will be distributed in accordance with old law. In spring of next year, renter's credits will be filed and claimed as part of the income tax during the tax filing season for tax year 2024, so that's next spring. And then in the following August in 2025, no renter's credits will be paid as sort of a standalone program. There may be late income tax returns coming in at that time, but that's sort of the timeline for the transition. I also want to mention that the legislature appropriated funds for tax credit outreach, which is funds sort of that could be used to distribute to organizations to promote the availability of the tax credit and discuss the transition and how the credit is administered. And that's it for Article 7. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions from members? Seeing none, thank you. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to be covering for one of our other analysts who is covering for another analyst's leave and doing the tax increment financing Articles 8 and 9 of the tax bill. I'm just going to cover these at a very high level. I don't think you want me getting into project specific and taking up all day. Yes, Article 8 contained all of the district specific provisions, and that is on pages 48 to 51 of the Act summary. There was a modification to the definition of small cities also in the section that encompasses the entire TIF Act in Chapter 469. And the previous definition defined a small city as one located 10 or more miles away from a city with a population of 10,000 or more. And the tax bill reduced that number from 10 to 5. So now the small city can be closer to a larger city. The Article 9 was essentially the Office of the State Auditor's policy and technical bill for the all TIF provisions. Big highlights are that the article made some clarification to the usage of increment for administrative purposes and changes to the requirements for decertification. And that's on pages 51 through 54 of the Act summary, if you'd like to check that out. Article 10 was the very large sales and use, local sales and use taxes article. All in all, there were 30 provisions for local governments. Nine of them were extensions or modifications to existing local taxes, and then there were 28 brand new tax authorizations for cities and counties. There was also established a local tax advisory task force that met over the summer. A report on they issued a report on recommendations on how these taxes should be authorized, and that was issued earlier this month. I believe the chair got a copy, but if you didn't, let me know and I can get it. And that was led by DOR. And then finally, that article established a moratorium on new authorizations or modifications to existing authorizations until June of 2025. And then Article 12 was the local special taxes article. It was very short, only three provisions. The first two pertain to the City of Duluth tourism tax that's imposed on lodging and food and beverage transactions, and that extended the duration of those taxes. And then the last one was a 15-year extension of the Cook County lodging tax from 15 years to 30 years. And Mr. Chair, that concludes the overview.
Nicely done. Any questions from members? Okay, well, that kind of concludes today. It was a little rocky, but I think we ended in a good spot. But just moving forward, we're gonna dive deep into some of the things like local government aid, CPA, and some of that. And I think it's really, really important. I just remind everybody that dialogues, misunderstandings. Let's just try to treat everyone and staff with respect and dignity. We're all professionals here, or we play like we're professionals. We'll see you next time. We're adjourned.